Shalom, everybody. Tonight we're going to do something a little different. Everybody has heard on the radio and in the news the last couple of days, everyone is talking about Rav Chaim Drukman. And being that he is my Rebbe, my teacher, I feel also an obligation and also a zchut to be able to share, especially with the English-speaking people, personal stories about Rav Drukman. His life was one of those larger-than-life personalities. An unbelievably energetic, born leader whose sincerity and helpfulness and the love of Israel, of Am Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, and Torat Yisrael, was just so outstanding. He's one of those people who just blows you away. And thousands of, maybe probably tens of thousands of people, really had the fortune of being influenced by him. Personally, he actually had a big influence on me before I even met him. My older brother, Morty, was in Bnei Akiva, and he really got active at the National Seminar of the TVI, that's after 11th grade, and Bnei Akiva used to bring in a Rosh Yeshiva to give classes at this intensive leadership seminar, and Rav Drukman was the Rav there of Shevet Shuva and Shevet Yeshurun. And that must have been like 1976, 1977, Tavshin Lamed Vav. And my brother Morty got that much more active in Bnei Akiva. Afterwards, he learned for 3 months with Rav Drukman during the Hakshara program, which took place in the Or Etzion Yeshiva. And afterwards, I and my other brother and my two sisters got involved in a... We eventually made Aliyah, and eventually our parents also made Aliyah. So we have a very big personal chov, a lot of thanks to thank him for. Just a quick couple of biographical notes before we get into the actual personality. Rav Drukman was born in Tafresh Tzani Gimel, 1932, in Poland, which today is the Ukraine. After the Nazis invaded and the Molotov-Ribbentrop-Molotov agreement, it was transferred to the Soviet Union, and it became communist. And everybody has heard of the Yevsetskaya. Those were the Jewish communists who were extremely strong and anti-religious. They wanted to take the Judaism out of all of the Jewish communities. And Rav Drukman was enrolled in one of their schools. He was forced to write on Shabbat. He was forced to write on Yom Kippur. And he realized that, you know, that it was wrong. He had a natural leaning from a young age to learning Judaic studies, to learning Torah. And he tells, Rav Drukman tells that his life was saved three times, that gave him a personal obligation to make the most out of life. He slept very little, and he really dedicated so many hours every day to helping Am Yisrael. And so he explained that when he was 9 years old and the Nazis invaded his village, his uncle had prepared a hiding place underneath the house so that while the Germans were pillaging and killing and capturing all the Jews of the community, so he was saved one time. That's the first time. Later, at the age of 12, his family moved to Romania for about a year, which was not under Nazi rule at the time. And then they found in 1944, Tavshin Dala, they found a Jewish couple who did not have children, but they received certificates to make Aliyah to what was called then Palestine. And they were willing to take him as if he were their child. And they bought tickets to a boat. There were three boats going from Romania to Turkey and from there to carry on to Israel. And they were had tickets on the Mefkura boat. I actually found this on the internet that this was, but they missed the boat. They came late to the boat, so they got on the third boat, and this that actually saved their lives because the second boat that they were supposed to be on, the Mefkura, was sunk by a Soviet submarine. And more than 300 Jewish refugees were killed. So Rav Drukman explains that that is the second time his life was saved. And the third time his life was saved was in a terrorist attack when he was in his early 60s. He used to go once a week, I remember, on the Sundays, to learn with Rav Eliezer Waldman. They would learn Chevruta, the writings of Rav Kook, both of them close students of Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook. And on the way, on Kvish Chotzei Yehuda, some of you know the that road, a terrorist opened up fire, and he killed Effie Ayubi. That was Rav Drukman's driver, and Rav Drukman was wounded. And that was the third time he explains that HaKadosh Baruch Hu very clearly gave him his life, and added on another 30 years to which he could really serve Am Yisrael. In short, he came to Israel. He came on Aliyah. His parents actually survived the Holocaust, and they came to join him afterwards. He became active in Bnei Akiva, and he was actually the madrich of the famous Shevet Eitanim. That was the Dosi Shevet, the religious Shevet, who made a religious overhaul in Bnei Akiva. That is when they stopped mixed dancing and going mixed swimming, and they started going to the yeshiva. And these are, to this day, you could say a large percentage of the leaders of religious Zionism. That's Rav Zalman Melamed, Rav the Rosh Yeshiva Beit El, Rav Tzvanya Drori, the Rosh Yeshiva of Kiryat Shmona, and the head of the Yeshivat Hezder there. Rav Yaakov Filber, the Rosh Yeshiva of the Yeshiva Letzirim, and many others. And they had a very dynamic madrich who at the age of 17 turned them onto Torah. And that madrich was, then he was called Chaimke Drukman. He then learned in Merkaz Harav. He did Nachal on Kibbutz Sa'ad. And through Bnei Akiva, he was a member of the National Committee. And there was a young woman who used to do the typing for Bnei Akiva. And eventually they got married. But she was studying medicine, and they weren't ready to get married. So apparently, Rav Tzvi Yehuda suggested that if they knew they were going to be married and it would not be easy for them to be working together in Bnei Akiva, so Rav Drukman went on Shlichut to Bnei Akiva of New York. You could say that this was the heyday of Bnei Akiva, and to a large extent it was due to this charismatic bachelor who could work full-time for Bnei Akiva. Interesting trivia fact that the head of Bnei Akiva at the time of New York was none other than Meir Kahana. And one of the madrichim there was Rav Eliezer Waldman. All three of them became members of Knesset. Miriam Levinger also was active in Bnei Akiva in the Bronx. Rav Rakefet, many, many great people came on Aliyah. And to a large extent, they all mention Rav Chaim Drukman as being a key influence in their lives. So he went back to learn in Yeshivat Merkaz Harav. His wife became a nurse, a doctor. And at the age of 30, Rav Tzvi Yehuda sent him to found a yeshiva tichonit. There were not a lot of yeshiva Bnei Akiva high schools. And afterwards, he founded a yeshiva gvoha. At the age of 36, this reads like, if you notice, the history of religious Zionism, where Rav Drukman was a key member. In Pesach, 1968, he led the Seder in the Park Hotel in Hebron, which about 100 Jews rented out the hotel. And just today, Shimon Rachamim, a neighbor of mine, told me that if you think Rav Drukman gets excited, he said you should have seen him at the Park Hotel there. He described him as he was redder than red. He was exploding like a ripe tomato. And he was hoarse as always and leading the Seder with his usual enthusiasm. And in fact, Rav Drukman was the one who gave the name of Gush Emunim. He was the one who founded the leader of the settlers movement. And many of the original meetings of Gush Emunim, including Hanan Porat and Benny Katzover and Menachem Felix, they were held in Rav Drukman's house in Merkaz Shapira. So he was a leading figure there. Afterwards, he was a member of Knesset for 15 years altogether, and he was the head of the Hesder Yeshiva organization, the head of Yeshivot Bnei Akiva for many years. For 70 years, he was a member of the National Committee of Bnei Akiva, and at the age of 80, he received Pras Yisrael, the highest award in Israel, for his life, his activities in education. So again, you could say that Rav Drukman, who just passed away yesterday, his Levaya was yesterday, that he summarized, he passed away, you could say, a significant chapter of religious Zionist history. Not only that, he was a consensus leader. The larger religious Zionism has become today, depends how you count it, but it's definitely hundreds of thousands of people. And the larger a movement becomes, the more fractionized it becomes. And it's hard, obviously, every group, every fraction has their own leader. But Rav Drukman was the accepted leader of all of the factions. And he basically has kept religious Zionism together as much as we can be. And now a lot of people are worried that it's going to split up into splinter factions, and because not every person is replaceable. And so that's regarding the future. Just a couple of short anecdotes before I get onto my personal connection with Rav Drukman. His wife did not let him take out a driver's license because he needed to sleep, and to a large extent, he did much of his sleeping in the car. And so he had for many, many decades a driver from the yeshiva and then from Knesset. He has 9 children, and about 200 children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, and I believe great-great-grandchildren. Bli Ayin Hara, that's a pretty respective shevet. And if people are trying to figure out how the elections in Israel, which were just held, have set up a government which is mostly religious, this is the first time in the history of Israel that most of the members of the government are religious. One of the reasons is because people like Rav Drukman have, even within their own lifetime, 200 descendants, and so the population of Israel is changing. In addition to having 9 children, he also adopted a child. This is in addition to one of his own children had Down syndrome. And also, there was a chayelet who I remember she used to come almost every Shabbat she was with them, and turned out she was a Bala Tshuva. She was also a Bad Bait. Their house was always full. And it's like one of these, families from Europe that you hear about a Rosh Hashiva who his wife has to count how many people there are before every meal. And that really was their house. There were always visitors. And this is aside from the thousands of students. And maybe the most significant example that I can give is that Rav Drukman, even though he had thousands of students, and he was a member of Knesset, he was a Sgan Sar, he used to answer the phones himself. Whenever I would call him up, he wouldn't have a secretary answer. And if he was busy, not only would he would call me back. And before there was call identification, he didn't know who was calling him. And nevertheless, this super important Rosh Yeshiva, rabbi and member of Knesset, he had that humility of answering every question, answering every phone call. He was, and he used to mention this a lot, that Rav Kook used to have on his chotemet, on his seal, Eved la'am kadosh al admat ha-kodesh, a servant to the holy people on the holy land. And I can't think of anybody who this is more applicable than to Rav Drukman himself. I was, I learned for a half a year in Yeshivat Kiryat Arba, then I spent a year in Hachsharan, Kibbutz Yavne, and then Kiryat Arba. And in the middle of that year was the Beit Hadassah terrorist attack, where six boys were killed and 22 wounded. One of them was my brother. And my parents were not keen on the idea of me returning to Yeshivat Kiryat Arba. But I wanted a Rav Kook, B'nai Akiva type of yeshiva within the Green Line. And everybody told me, Rav Drukman, Or Etzion is the place for me. They had begun a yeshiva gvoha 2 years before, so I was in the third year of the yeshiva. Yeah, Nomi, we sent out the link on the email and by WhatsApp. We're in the middle of a class, so I can't talk now. But you... You don't get the email. Okay, but I'm in the middle of recording, so unfortunately I can't speak with you right now or send you the link. I'm sorry.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Yeah, sorry about that. We are continuing. Out of all of Rav Kook's activities, and again, as a Rosh Yeshiva, oh, here we go. I am muted. Now I am unmuted. Yeah. Rav Drukman always said that the most important of all of his mif'alim is the yeshiva. And in fact, he used to come to the yeshiva at 11 o'clock at night, and that's when he would begin giving shiurim. Each shiur was about 45 minutes, and he would give to the younger guys from 11 to 11:45, and then from 11:45 to 12:30, and to the older guys from 12:30 to 1:15. And this was a regular routine almost every night. During his classes, most of them on the writings of Rav Kook and Jewish philosophy, but also on Tanakh, he would receive telephones from important members of Knesset. I remember one time Arik Sharon, who was then Sar HaBitachon, the Minister of Defense, called, and Rav Drukman apologized and said, "I'm sorry, I'm in the middle of a class. I'll call you back afterwards." He was like a father to us, to all the boys in yeshiva. Especially, we were a small group. There were only about five of us from Chutz La'aretz. And he knew that our parents weren't in the country, and he always put out a, always looked over us. I remember one time I had 50 shekel, that was all I had to my name, and somebody took it from my room. In yeshiva, you don't lock your room. And I was very distraught about it, and I went to Rav Drukman. I was also very upset that, what, in a yeshiva, somebody would steal. And not only that, I didn't have a penny to my name. I couldn't buy anything. And the following day, Rav Drukman sent, I still remember a guy by the name of David Aluf, came, and he told me that they caught the boy who stole the money. And, I forgot to mention, Rav Drukman asked me how much money I had, and I didn't remember exactly. I said it was about 50 shekel. And so Rav Drukman, he must have paid the money from his own pocket. It was exactly 50 shekel. I don't know if that was the exact amount or not, but Vikitsur, he wanted to make sure that a boy, an 18-year-old boy, alone in Israel, wouldn't be worried and wouldn't be penniless. When he found out that I was doing my laundry in a pail, we used to take sabon kvisa laundry soap, put it in hot water, and take a magav and hold it upside down. Use the handle of the magav and swirl it around. And after letting it soak for about an hour, we would rinse it out and hang it out. And somebody told Rav Drukman that that's how we were doing the laundry. And he told us that he arranged with the kitchen that when they do, when they wash the laundry of the Shabbat tablecloths every Sunday, they will do our laundry for us. So again, he really looked over for us. He actually asked me before Leil HaSeder, where am I going to be for the Seder? He knew that my parents weren't in Israel. I didn't have family in Israel. I had one great uncle who I didn't know that well. And so I said, I don't know. So Rav Drukman said, well, you can do the Seder by us. And so I said, but I have a friend who also needs a place for the Seder. He says, bring him along too. So I had the fortune of enjoying a Seder with Rav Drukman and the family and about 30, 40 other guests in Yeshivat Ateret Kohanim in the Old City, which was also a real experience. Another interesting anecdote, there was one of my roommates who I thought maybe he had just came into the room, and that's when my money disappeared. So I told Rav Drukman that maybe he's a suspect. And Rav Drukman got upset. He said, "Ma pitom." And afterwards, I noticed that he paid special attention to this boy. Sometimes asked him, "How's your mother doing?" And eventually, I found out that this guy's father was killed in the Yom Kippur War when this boy was 11 years old, and that in fact, Rav Drukman he kept an eye out for the underprivileged, for the less fortunate, to make sure that everyone was doing okay. It was interesting, by the way, in the yeshiva, he accepted, not only did I never hear of anybody who was not accepted, he actually accepted, I remember at least one boy who could not learn. He had some kind of psychological problem, but Rav Drukman accepted him to the yeshiva as well. Just an example of the closeness that Rav Drukman had when he came to on a speaking tour in America, and I invited him to Riverdale, where I was running Bnei Akiva, and I asked him to give a shiur there and Friday night to Bnei Akiva and in the shul on Shabbat. So when he saw me, he hadn't seen me for about a half a year, he gave me such a warm and strong hug. But what blew me away was the Onik Shabbat was held at the Hollander family. And as we came in, he saw the name Hollander. And he said to them, "Are you from Switzerland?" And they said, "Yes." And he starts talking about how he was their madrich 30 years beforehand on Hakshara. He remembered her name, his name. He actually remembered them. And that's when I know the importance for a educator to remember everybody's name. He kept in touch with his students. After leaving the yeshiva, he performed my chuppah. And by the way, I was worried that I had been a little at the Kiryat Arba yeshiva, and then a little at Or Etzion for 1 year, and then I was on Shlichut for Bnei Akiva for 2 years. So I was worried that there wouldn't be people to come to my wedding to dance. And I mentioned it to somebody in Or Etzion, and Rav Drukman arranged a bus of guys to make sure that there would be friends to dance at my wedding. And he actually... So... Not only did he perform my wedding, we invited him to my son's wedding. This is 25 years later, and he came to the wedding. We gave him a bracha at the chuppah, and 10 years later, at my younger daughter's wedding, this is Rav Drukman is already 85, just out of nimus, to be polite, we sent him a invitation to the wedding. We didn't believe that he would come. But a couple minutes before the chuppah, he calls me up on my cell phone, and he apologizes. He said, "I really wanted to make it to the chuppah. But I wanted to tell you that there's this big, this was right before one of the elections, and there was like 3, 4 years ago. And he said there was a big kenes of the Bayit Yehudi, the religious Zionist party. And he said they started late and they want him to speak, and he and things are running behind schedule. So he called to make sure that we wouldn't hold up the chuppah for him. And he came in about 10 o'clock at night and danced with the chatan. And he always made it a point to come to weddings. I actually heard yesterday from a boy who learned in the yeshiva. Just at the high school, he wasn't in the yeshiva gvoha, and in every machzor of the high school, there are like 150 guys, and he was not a good student, and he was not close with Rav Drukman. But again, as the custom was, he sent an invitation to Rav Drukman when he was 23. This is 5 years after he left the yeshiva, and just Rav Drukman comes at 12 o'clock at night to the wedding hall. The wedding was already over. The only one who was left there was the chatan, the kala, and their family. Rav Drukman asked him for if he could make a l'chaim. They brought him a cup of wine. He made borei priya gafen. He made gave them a blessing, and then he apologized that he has to run to another wedding. The joke was in my time that a wedding without Rav Drukman was not a real wedding. And this was the feeling that he gave to all of his students. When anybody would ask Rav Drukman for advice, his advice was always so clear, and from my experience, he usually worded it with a rhetoric question that made things so obvious. I remember when I was thinking of learning for smicha in the for the rabbinut, and I was 26. And I asked Rav Drukman, I said, I'd like to be a rabbi, I'd like to be an educator, and he always encouraged us to go in that direction. But I said, I know myself, I know my faults, my shortcomings. It's hard to think of myself as a rabbi. How can I be a rabbi? To which Rav Drukman answered with a rhetoric question, and who do you think should be the rabbis? Those who think that they know everything? Those who are so arrogant that they think so highly of themselves? He says, Adarabba. You're the type of person that should... He didn't say the Adarabba. That was like the end of his rhetorical question, which just made things so more simple. I remember to one of the guys in the yeshiva, one of the other guys from Chutz Laretz, He used to go away a lot for Shabbat towards the end of the year. He was also active in Bnei Akiva, and he was giving sichot, and he had to buy souvenirs for his family and friends. And Rav Drukman noticed that he wasn't around in the yeshiva. So he asked my friend, where have you been? So he said, I have to do this before I leave Israel. I have to do this, I have to do that, I have to do this, I have to do that. So Rav Drukman answered him. He said, you know what? You have a lot of good excuses. Ach, Talmid Chacham, ani lo choshev sheteitze mize. I don't think you're going to be such a great Torah scholar through good excuses. He had a knack of making things so obvious. Also, when Bnei Akiva asked him about the issue of the Jews from Russia, Rav Drukman was very active. He encouraged all of us to go and to teach Judaism, to get the Jews from Russia out and to bring them on Aliyah. And one of the obvious questions is that about 20% of those, that this is when I went in Tavshin Nun Aleph in 1991, about 20% of the Jews who were interested in making Aliyah were not halakhically Jewish. And so the question was, what are we supposed to do with all these non-Jews, right? Obviously, when you have a Bnei Akiva camp and you want to teach Judaism and want to teach about Aliyah, not a small percentage of these people who are going to make Aliyah are goyim, are not Jewish. So Rav Drukman answered again with one of his rhetorical questions that says, and if you're, I'll say it in Hebrew, im achicha ya echad mehem, if your brother was one of those people, you wouldn't do everything that you could to help them get out. And again, if every Jew is my brother, and we feel achrayut, responsibility for each other. So, yeah. So even if together with my brothers come some non-Jews, oh, okay. So, but at least my brothers will be coming home and will be staying connected to the Jewish people. If we would have waited one generation longer, those Jews would have been totally intermarried and totally assimilated. Rav Drukman was an unbelievable teacher. And there are certain Divrei Torah, there are certain classes which I heard from him several times, which I imagine over the years he literally gave thousands of times. But he always said that before every time he gives a class, he prepares it. And anybody who has ever heard Rav Drukman during the time of Purim heard the term of the Midrash of how that says that Mordechai did not bow down to Haman. And Chazal asked, what about the rest of the Jews? What about the rest of the rabbis? They bow down to Haman? So the Gemara says that no, they just avoided the situation. If they saw Haman coming, they would run the other way. On the other hand, Mordechai, lo yichrav lo yishtachaveh, davka. That's any student of Rav Drukman will remember that davka, in Haman's face, Mordechai would stand up and davka not bow down to him, to show that Jews do not bow down to idols. We don't bow down to those who hate the Jewish people. There's another midrash that I heard him say several times and we'll never forget. Im nafalti kamti. Biglal shenafalti. The pasuk says, ki nafalti kamti. Because I fell, I got up. Not despite the fact that I fell, we got back on our feet, but because we fell, because we've learned many times, Rav Kook writes, and Rav Drukman was one of the closest students of Rav Tzvi Yehuda, that the world and life is made of one arrow, which has ups and downs along the way. Being that we're running out of time, we'll just stick to the most important things. There were always guests for Shabbat in Rav Drukman's family. How do I know? Because he would eat his Shabbat meals with the yeshiva, with 300, 400 boys. And it was interesting. He had a son who was a real troublemaker. He wanted attention. And in front of the whole yeshiva, he would act up and throw things and yell. And his father, the Rosh Yeshiva, had to make a decision. And he disciplined his son. I remember him chasing him around the Chadar Ochel to catch him, to discipline him. Rav Drukman was a real educator. By the way, he almost never threw anybody out of his yeshiva. Even the famous actor Shuli Rand was a student, and Rav Drukman threatened to kick him out of the yeshiva, but he didn't kick him out of the yeshiva. Anybody who heard Rav Drukman daven as a shliach tzibur, as a chazan on Rosh Hashanah, he was the first chazan that I ever heard that would mamash cry during davening. It was very, very moving. Also interesting, in Rav Drukman's yeshiva, after davening on Friday night, when everyone would dance, we would dance the Hora, not just the yeshiva shuffle. He wanted to make a point in everything that he did in the yeshiva. This was an Eretz Yisrael yeshiva, where we had classes in Tanakh, and we had classes in philosophy, and classes in Musar, and not just in Gemara. He even told me that while I was on Shlichut in Chutz Laretz, after a year in yeshiva, I went at the age of 21, to work for Bnei Akiva, and I gave a weekly class in the Mizrahi building for adult education, and Rav Drukman saw this in an article in the Hatzofe, Hebrew newspaper in Israel, and he hung it up on the bulletin board of the yeshiva that as a sign of how proud he is of the students of the yeshiva. I remember guys in the yeshiva in Oratzion, it was a very special yeshiva. Guys, many guys would run to lunch and would run back to the Beit Midrash after lunch. The hatmada there was so strong. I have a friend who left after the first year of the yeshiva because he said it was too intensive for him. I remember Rav Drukman used to come in at 2 o'clock in the morning into the Beit Midrash, just to see if guys were still learning, and he would be beaming from happiness when he would see guys still learning. He would lead the Zmirot. He had a loud, booming voice. He had the Shabbos clock turn the lights off during Sudash Lishit so that we would sing in the dark to have that extra special feeling. Personally, I definitely have to say that my connection with the writings of Rav Kook, which to a large extent I've dedicated my life to teaching and to publishing Rav Kook's Svarim, he was the one who connected me with the writings of Rav Kook. Now I'll just finish off with a couple of sayings that he used to say all the time, and which really typify his personality and his hashkafa. He said many times, and he mentioned this again at his 90th birthday party, that when he was young, growing up in Bnei Akiva, he said, we believed, the feeling was that we were the last generation that would put on tefillin. We would be the last generation to observe Shabbat. That was the feeling in Israel after the Holocaust. And he took matters into his own hands, and as I said, turned Shevet Eitanim into the turning point of Torah education in Bnei Akiva. He was one of the first heads of Yeshivot Bnei Akiva and the heads of Yeshivot Hezder, and was without a doubt one of the people responsible for making the religious Zionist movement what it is today. Another thing that he used to mention a lot is Beshuv Hashem Shivat Zion Hayinu Kicholmim, that David HaMelech writes that when we will return to Zion after a very long exile, turned out 2,000 years, it was like a dream. Now, there are a lot of explanations what it means like a dream. Rav Drukman used to say, look at the Jews in America. They are like a boy who's learning in a high school class, and he's just sitting and daydreaming, and he is not paying attention to a word that the teacher is saying. He said, there are so many Jews today who are dreaming, daydreaming, and don't even realize that Am Yisrael has returned to the land, and we have a Jewish state, and we are in the midst of the Geula process, that God is redeeming the Jewish people. Today, most of the Jewish, halachic Jews in the world, 7 million Jews, are in the land of Israel. But so many Jews are dreaming, and they need to be woken up. And again, so many of his students, we've accepted upon ourselves to try and get the Jews from America and from all over the world to wake up and to be part of the dream come true. Usually dreams don't come true, but the return to Zion is a dream coming true. Actually one of the names of his books was based on the Talmud Yerushalmi, Aleph, which says that Kachi Gulatan Shel Yisrael, the redemption, is like the sun rising. It is a slow but sure rising. And despite the setbacks in Yamit and the uprooting of Gush Katif and the problems with the Israeli government, and there are problems. But again, that's what life is about. The general direction is an arrow going up, but there are ups and downs on the way. Kima, little by little. Rav Drukman always used to tell the story about the Rebbe who sent the student to bring a sefer, and the room was dark. And the Rebbe said, what do you mean the room is dark? So yell. And the student goes down and yells, doesn't chase away the darkness. And the Rebbe says, why don't you take a stick and try and chase away the darkness? And that doesn't work either. And then the Rebbe says, well, why don't you take a candle, and even a little light can chase away a lot of darkness. And that was Rav Drukman's approach. He was not naive. He realized the problems with the state of Israel and the problems that Dalad and in his time, when he was in Knesset, most of the members of the government were not religious. Nevertheless, he, like Reb Levi Yitzchak Miberdichev, focused on the good of Am Yisrael. He always used to say that the most important thing is histaklut klalit, to look at the general picture. The general picture of Am Yisrael is we have an unbelievably great people. You look at the state of Israel. Thank God that generally the state of Israel is unbelievably great, unbelievably successful. So yes, there are challenges. So what do? We add light to chase away the darkness. Rav Drukman, as I mentioned before, did not sleep a lot at night. I actually remember one time during the middle of one of his 12 o'clock classes, and somebody asked him a question, and he was standing up, leaning on his shtender. He always had a huge cup of coffee so that he shouldn't fall asleep. But during the question, Rav Drukman fell asleep standing up on his shtender. He was a workhorse, and his entire life was for his family, for Am Yisrael, for his students. Another quote that he used to mention a lot, I'll say it in Hebrew. Anachnu lomdim Torah kedei lemale et chovotenu haleumit, umishartim batzava kedei lemale et chovotenu hadatit. He says, we learn Torah in order to fulfill our national responsibility to Am Yisrael. And we serve in the army in order to fulfill our religious responsibility. Most people saw it as the opposite. But if you look in the Tanakh, we see all the heroes of the Tanakh. They also were masters of Torah and also warriors. Just to finish off, Rav Drukman used to say that religious Zionism is not a compromise, but it is Shleimut. It is also Am Yisrael, also Eretz Yisrael, also Torah Yisrael, also religious, also Zionism. And those who were just religious without Zionism, or those who were Zionists without religion, they're unfortunately just living half of the beauty of this package deal. And the final word, which Rav Drukman's the biography is named, is Hineni. Here I am. And Rav Drukman used to say, I am at the disposal of Am Yisrael. He used to quote a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim that says that Vavadtem et Hashem Elokecha ve'et Amo Yisrael. You should serve the Lord our God and his nation of Israel. Now that sounds sort of heretical, to serve two things. But the idea of Yisrael v'oraita v'kud shabrichu chadahu, when one serves the Torah and one serves Am Yisrael, he is serving God. And I can't think of a better living example of Rav Drukman. And I highly suggest everyone, especially if you understand Hebrew, going into the internet and hearing all the hespedim, the eulogies of a very special person with all of these true documented stories.